Welcome to the Officer Media Group Roll Call Podcast. Officer Roll Call is meant to inform and entertain. Now, let's get into this episode.
Welcome to this episode of the Officer Roll Call Podcast. This is Paul Peluso, the editor of Officer Magazine. I'm joined, as always, by Frank Borelli, the editorial director of Officer Media Group. How's it going today, Frank?
Pretty good, Paul. How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty good myself. So today we're going to talk about active shooter response, and specifically we're going to talk about the role that tactical medic teams play in the response, the response of SWAT teams to active shooter incidents. So Frank, if you could talk a little about how that response has changed within the last decade or even a little bit more, and the role that you've seen tactical medic teams play.
So, you know, when we first started with active shooter, and it does go back 25 years ago, you know, Columbine was 1999, kind of launched the active shooter movement, if you will. There was never a mixture of medics in any of the responding law enforcement unless they happened to be EMTs on their own, or, you know, a member of the SWAT team got there that was a medic or whatever. Typically, it was law enforcement going in, securing an area, and then the fire crew would come in, the EMS and the paramedics and everybody else would come in once it was declared safe. As things evolved, we kind of got to the point where we realized we needed to get the EMS and the emergency medical providers in faster. So through better communications and planning, some cross training, law enforcement would go in and you'd have what was considered no longer a hot zone, but a warm zone. In other words, there's no immediate threat, but we haven't 100% cleared it. But there's people that need treatment. So the paramedics and the EMTs would come into the quote unquote warm zone. Things continue to evolve. And I think what we're going to talk about today, when we talk about tactical medical teams, we're talking about paramedics, EMTs that are actually embedded with the responding teams. They're actually fire, EMS, paramedic, they're not law enforcement, but they're working hand in hand and part of that law enforcement response team. It's an ever-changing world, Paul. I've been saying it for a long time. I think that EMT basic certification ought to be part of every police academy. I think law enforcement needs a lot more of the emergency medical training than we get right now.
Yeah, and you know, of course there is some training involved. You know, to begin with for law enforcement officers, but yes, not to the extent of EMTs and paramedics. And so we're going to kind of review a piece that's going to run in the March, April issue of Officer Magazine, set to be out in a couple weeks here. It's titled Medics in the Line of Fire, and it's written by our colleague, Joe Vince. And it's a very detailed piece about tactical medic teams. He speaks to three different agencies, one in Greene County, or one in Greene, Ohio, one in Pasco County, Florida, and one in Gaston County, North Carolina. And in all these cases, you know, it's the fire department or EMS squads that are the ones, like you said, providing the paramedics to be part of those teams. And in this case, you know, the first one here, Greene, Ohio, actually started in, you know, at, what is it, 1998, 1999, like you said, right when everything kind of started with Columbine around the active shooter, the push for active shooter response. And yep. So they have had a long established team, and they do allow those paramedics to be armed when responding to SWAT and active shooter situations. And that is kind of a rarity that not a lot of states allow for that. And that kind of goes into, you know, being able to have these teams, being able to have paramedics on and also have them armed. Gaston County, North Carolina, when Joe talked to them, North Carolina is not one of the states that allows EMTs and paramedics to be armed, but they're trying to get that through and work it through and currently have them on staff unarmed. But I do think, you know, that's an, you know, it's an interesting part of this. What is your take on having them aren't.
Well, I think it's a matter of training and knowing what you're doing going in. I think it's amazing a state like North Carolina, that's an open carry state, would have any kind of restrictions about EMTs or paramedics being armed in a high threat situation. And that said, if I was a SWAT team unit, a member of a SWAT team unit, and I've got some paramedic that I don't know who wants to come go through a door with me with a gun on, I'm not comfortable with that either. I want to make sure that they're trained, that they know what they're doing, that the weapon discipline is good, that they know when they're supposed to pull their weapon, when they're not supposed to pull their weapon, and all that stuff. There has to be a level of trust before I go through a door with somebody with a gun. I used to know a gentleman who was a quote unquote tactical paramedic in the Northern Neck of Virginia. And this is probably going back 20 years. And he was not allowed to be armed, but he did have to qualify with every weapon. And the reasoning for that was he didn't need to be armed because he was going in to be a medic. But if an officer went down, and that was his primary focus, he wasn't going so much as to treat victims or suspects. He was going in with the team in case a team member needed emergency medical care. And then he had to know how to secure that officer's weapon. So that was why he had to qualify, was so that, you know, if an officer went down, he could secure the weapon while and then treat the officer. And interestingly, he had to qualify with all of them. And then he was still told, but you don't pick up that weapon to use it unless your life is in immediate danger. You are that person you're treating. You don't ever move around in the inside of a structure with a gun with the rest of the team. That's not what you're there for. It's very, very strict regulation. I don't have a problem with it. Again, I think, you know, the advanced first aid and CPR AED training that law enforcement gets is not nearly enough for what we're exposed to and how many things that we are the first responders for. We're first on scene. I think we need a lot more than this is a tourniquet. This is how you use it. This is a pressure bandage. This is how you use it. this is a chest seal. This is how you use it. And even then you start getting into a TCCC class, the tactical combat care or combat casualty care. Tension pneumothorax is something we probably ought to know how to treat. I don't think every cop out here needs to know how to run an IV. I don't think we all need to be EMT advanced. But, you know, I think we need a lot more training than we get. I think there's something that needs to be done beyond the advanced first aid, CPR, AED, Narcan or naloxone, whichever your agency's using for treatment of overdoses. We're really behind the curve, I think, in that area. But I love that people out here are doing it, and they're integrating these tactical medics. It's going to save lives. It already has, not a doubt in my mind.
Yeah. So when it comes to, arming the medics in the state of North Carolina, they are exploring the option of having the medics sworn in as volunteer deputies. But in both Ohio and Florida, part of the whole thing is that, it's when their life is in danger, that it's for self-defense and not, you don't have the medics going into a scene with guns drawn, part of that SWAT unit. It's more for if their life is in danger, they can use it. I would encourage everybody to go and read Joe's article when it's live on the site and when it's in the magazine. A lot of really, really good stuff in here. He speaks extensively with Christopher Gent, who is part of the team there in Green, Ohio, and has been pretty much since the beginning there. And he basically talks about, his training, what went into building this team, that they have a 10 member team of medics there that train with the SWAT team, and that basically everything that they have to go through and how they've been able to integrate themselves into the overall team. You talked about it a little bit, Frank. Do you think would there be some apprehension among the officers on a team to have a medic along with them?
Again, there would be until the medic was known to them. So if the medic comes in and trains regularly with them, if the medic gets to be part of that closed circle family, then they'd be comfortable with it. But they need to be as sure of that medic as they are of each every other team member, right? So if you've got a SWAT team that trains once a week. The medic needs to come train with them once a week. The policies and the protocols and everything has to be developed. You know, clear guidance for what they can do, what they can't do. Where are they in the stack? If they're in the stack, are they waiting by the APC to be called? What's the deployment tactics? Once everything has been established and a sufficient level of confidence and trust has been built through the training, then I'd be okay with it. But, you know, some total stranger guy shows up, he's a medic and he's, you know, a volunteer fireman and his actual real-time job is, you know, whatever. He's a business analyst. I'm not sure I want him coming in the door with me because he's just one more person I got to take care of. And I definitely don't want him coming in the door with me with a gun because I don't know him from Adam. That makes sense?
Of course. And, like we said, this is relatively new, not as new in Ohio there, but in other parts of the country. And, you know, I mentioned Pasco County, Florida, the Pasco County Fire Rescue, you know, teamed up with the Pasco County Sheriff's Office. That's just north of Tampa here in Florida. And they didn't start their, you know, that SWAT unit or start working with the SWAT unit until early last year. And actually didn't send out, you know, medics until February. So
hey, Paul, forgive me. I want to interrupt you for a second because you talk about Pasco County. Yeah. One of the problems, and it's in the article, people will read it. Excuse me. When they do the pre-warrant service briefs, mm-hmm. they're bringing in people that are outside the closed circle of the team. They're bringing in those medics. They're bringing in potentially the medics chain of command in the fire department. A lot of places, very understandably, a lot of police departments, sheriff's offices do not want anybody outside the circle to have information prior to actually hitting the target because, and I don't mean offense to any firefighters. Okay. I love firefighters. I was one for myself for 11 years. I have the utmost respect for our volunteer firefighters. That said, there's been times in history when people you think you can trust can't be trusted. Same is true in law enforcement. But when you're serving a high risk warrant on a target, you want to very carefully control, 100% carefully control who has prior knowledge, who knows the date and time, who knows the staging area, who knows anything about the target. And when you start sharing that with people outside of law enforcement, it makes a lot of people very, very worried. So if I'm going to include a medic in that brief, the medic needs to understand once I call you into this brief, you're with us until we're done and you're not going anywhere alone. And it's not that we distrust anybody. It's that we have to control the information. So if you're going to be part of this team, we're going to go hit this drug house. Once we're called in for the brief, you're part of this team and you are not to be released. You're with us until we're done. And it just has to be done for safety's sake and for control of information.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense, Frank. And it does sound like, you know, these are integrated part members of the team, that it's not, mm-hmm. you know, you're, you know, that they call in different medics here right. and there, that it's like specific members. And yeah, so they, you know, they had them in body armor and armored vehicles, and then they were there with their issued agency weapons and were able to be called up out to this high risk search warrant call in February. So yeah, this is very new for them. And the first thing that they've done this. So it was kind of, you know, this was kind of the first test case and it sounded like it went well. And yeah, it'll be interesting if more agencies out there start doing this type of thing. You know, having members outside of law enforcement being integrated with the agency and with different units is kind of new, but something that's definitely growing. Just like sometimes social workers are sent along to different calls, that this is something new.
It's change, inevitable.
Yeah, change will it'll happen no matter what, right, Frank? And
so the question, Paul, is the balance, yeah. right? You talked about social exactly. workers. We have critical incident teams now. My home county, Calvert County, Maryland, as we're recording this podcast, just yesterday or the day before, graduated a new class of critical incident team members, and they're social workers and they're deputies and they're psychologists and MDs uh-huh. and priests and reverends and ministers, and they're all members of this critical incident team. So when there's a situation that warrants it, it's not just a call out for controlling some kind of violent scene, but you have somebody who's in some kind of challenge, somebody who's emotionally distressed, somebody who's whatever, the answer may not be the beanbag gun or pepper ball or OC spray. The answer might be somebody talking them off a ledge. Having the social worker who understands all of the tactical considerations while they do their work is the perfect answer. But what I said was the balance is what's going to matter. So you're going to have a lot of agencies where they take their police officers or their deputies and they train them up to be the medics. And then you're going to have the other side of that where the police say, hey, that's not my gig. I'm a policeman. You're the medic. You come with us, and they integrate them in. And we're going to see that happen. It's just going to be dependent on budget, agency size, trust amongst the public safety folks, directives from the controlling governmental entity. All that stuff will play a role. And we'll figure it out, but it is inevitable that we are going to have more and more emergency medical personnel from either side of the street as we move forward. Because let's be honest, protect and serve means serve. Recently, there was a shooting a couple counties from mine, and the officers that fired the weapons, once the subject was down, neither one of them wanted to make an approach. Perfect tactics. I'm good with that. Allied agency sergeant shows up and says, okay, we need to start working him. And they immediately started emergency medical care. And when you've got emergency medical care on a subject that's got two chest wounds, whatever, that's high level medical care. That's not advanced first aid. So we're going to see it. It is coming, and officers should be open to it. They should relish in it. They should love it.
Do you see this as being more of a thing for, you know, larger agencies are actually more applicable to smaller and mid-sized agencies? Because with, you know, NYPD, they already have a lot of, and LAPD, your real big agencies have a lot of this integrated already.
Well,
it's something that your sheriff's departments and smaller agencies can kind of get on board with.
I tell you who's going to be the challenge is the medium-sized agency. So, like, I love to pick on Humboldt, Iowa, because it's where my wife's family's from. And the last time we were there, they had, like, three police officers and four deputies, and that was all there was for the whole county. And then they had the volunteer fire people, right? They all know each other. They're all playing softball together. They all go to the same church. They go to the same pool. It's a little tiny town. So, you know, they know when they have that trust. So when the deputies are on scene, and they need backup, when the fire guys get off the piece with axes, the deputies are happy to have them there. They're like, yeah, come on. I need your help. The big cities, you're either going to see that great integration or you're going to see the continuing divided line, but they still work together. Once they're on the street, you know, it's the same team. We're all working towards public safety. The medium-sized agencies are going to be where I foresee problems, where people are worried about their domain, where people are worried about perception of the community, and people have some insecurities, and the fire chief doesn't want to give up anything to the police chief, and the police chief doesn't want to give anything up to the fire chief. And, you know, the bickering and that's where I see it being a problem. The NFL cities, if the city's huge agencies, I don't see it as a problem. The really small towns that are fully integrated already in the community, even if not in their agencies, I don't see it being a problem. The medium-sized places are going to have to figure out how to do this right.
Yeah, and I think like Pasco County is a pretty good example. It's larger, but it not... Yeah, as an agency size, not as large as, say, Hillsborough County, which is the county that I live here in Florida. I'm right by Tampa, but Pasco County is actually only about a mile north of me. I'm on the furthest north side of Hillsborough that you could be. I can walk to Pasco, but Pasco goes all the way west to the coast, pretty much, and then east to, you know, more than a few miles that way. It's a large counties that take up a lot of space and have a lot of coverage area and do have a lot of, you know, they have a big staff, but not as big as some other areas. And it would be interesting to see, you know, how that goes. Cause it's, you know, a lot of people to have involved and also a very big coverage area. So I'll
put a number on it for you, Paul.
Yeah.
I think the agencies with 20 officers to 75 or 100.
Okay.
That's where I think we're going to see the challenges. The people under 20, they all work together real well. Yeah. More than 100, they all do okay. They've got it figured out. It's that 20, 25 agency to 100. That's where we're going to see the challenge.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us for this episode of Roll Call Podcast. I think this is a good discussion. And yeah, if you guys have any, questions about this story or any of your own, suggestions or input that you want to give us about medics serving on tactical teams, reach out. Our email is editors@officer.com. Is there anything you wanted to add before we sign off, Frank?
You know, I really want to encourage the agencies to embrace that. You know, I just said, I think we're gonna have a problem in a certain size of agency. I want to encourage the agencies to embrace it. If I've got a voice at all that's worth anything, we lose too many officers because of delayed medical care. And in a true trauma situation, the difference between treatment in 30 seconds and treatment in 5 minutes absolutely can kill people. I mean, we lose lives that way. Bleeding to death. I'm sorry. We have too many losses that can be prevented. And I really want to encourage agencies to give more medical training, more trauma care training to their officers, even if it's just through, just offering some kind of incentive. So if you got an officer who goes and gets on his own time, his own dime, an EMTB certification, then give him an extra couple of days off or give him 1% in his paycheck. Give him something. Get incentivize it. We really are going to have to do this. It is coming. And I want agencies, again, I encourage them, resolve these challenges before they hit you in the face in a bad way. Embrace the service side of this and improve the public safety quality that you provide to your communities. That's my last thought, Paul. I'll be quiet now.
Sounds great, Frank. Yeah, thanks for all the input. I think this is a good discussion. And I said, thank you everybody for joining on this episode of the Roll Call Podcast. We hold these every other week, and you guys are used to also seeing the Lineup Podcast, which is weekly. So thank you so much, and stay safe and take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Officer Roll Call. Be sure to check back every 2 weeks for a new episode. Stay safe.